Again, this is a furthering of our experience with life. Just replace the name Job with you. And what does the name Job mean? Hated and persecuted. And when you walk the life of God, you will be hated and persecuted. Not by the worldly people, but by the religious folk. If you remember, Jesus was hated and persecuted, wasn't he? Who hated him and persecuted him? The religious people of the day. So you have to pick these patterns up and understand that when you walk God's life, it's going to be persecution from the, quote, religious folk, the ones who think they're righteous and more holy than everyone else. If you know the pattern, will it be a surprise? So you should be prepared and know that ahead of time they're going to come at you. But if you're standing upon the rock, the foundation of God, the Word of God, can they shake you? See, the foundation of God cannot be shaken. It's a sure foundation. It cannot be shaken. So we stand upon this Word and understand the truth of it, not a translation of it, like a certain translation, King James or anything else, but the truth of what the Spirit of God spoke to us in these words, then guess what? You'll never be shaken. They can do anything they want, but it's like Job said, like God told the Satan, he said, do anything you want to, but you can't touch his life. You can torment him, but you can't touch him. You can't hurt him. When you know that, you're free to go ahead and do what God told you, because he can't stop you, can he? Okay, chapter 7, verse 1. Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth, and are not his days also like the days of a hireling? As a servant earnestly desires the shadow, and as a hireling looks for the reward of his work, so am I made to possess months of vanity, and wearisome nights are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be gone? And I am full of tossings to and fro unto the dawning of the day. My flesh is clothed like with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. Oh, remember that my life is wind. Mine eyes shall no more see good. The eye of him that has seen me shall see me no more. Thine eyes are upon me, and I am not. As the cloud is consumed and vanished away, so is he that goes down to the grave shall come up no more. He shall return no more to his house, neither shall his place know him any more. Therefore I will not refrain from my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Am I a sea or a whale that thou settest a watch over me? When I say, my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall ease my complaint, then you scarest me with dreams and terrify me through visions, so that my soul chooses strangling and death rather than my life. I loathe it. I would not live always. Let me alone, for my days are vanity. What is man that thou shouldest magnify him, and that thou shouldest set thine heart upon him, and that thou shouldest visit him every morning and try him every moment? How long wilt thou not depart from me, nor let me alone, till I swallow down my spittle? I have sinned. What shall I do unto you? What shall I do to you? O thou preserver of men, why have you set me as a mark against thee, so that I am a burden to myself? And why dost thou not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now shall I sleep in the dust, and you shall seek me in the morning, but I shall not be. Boy, this is a good one. There's some good stuff in here. Again, this is Job answering who? Eliphaz. And Eliphaz started his work back in chapter 5, right? Or 4. And now we're in chapter 7, and Job's continued from 6 on into his statements. He said, is there not an appointed time? And I want to say something here. I'm going to leave it here. Is there not, and the word appointed time is not the correct rendering. It should say this. Is there not hardship to humanity upon the earth? Is there not hardship to humanity on the earth? Someone tell me they come to this life and have had no struggle. See, that's what life is about. It is a struggle. It's no different than a baby in the womb struggling to come out, or a chicken in an egg struggling. It has to break that shell to get out, to get into life, right? We have to break this outer shell of our humanity to come to life, do we not? We have to break the pride of humanity, come out of that shell of ego, I, me, my, and mine, so that I can truly touch the life of God, because pride and arrogance cannot touch God. It's just not a possibility. See, I've got to get rid of that so I can get to God. He said, are not his days also like the days of a hireling? Now, tell me what choice a hireling has. Imagine that. Now, we're not talking about today's world, because today's world, no one binds the boss, do they? They all try to be bosses. But I'm talking about, let's talk in biblical days. In biblical days, someone, you're a hireling. When someone hired you, it's just the same as possessing you. You belong to me today while I'm paying for you. You do what I tell you, and there's no discussion in it. If you don't do what I tell you, you receive no pay. So if you're a hireling, how are you going to eat if you don't obey? It's going to be tough, isn't it? So we got to go back to the understanding in this understanding when it was spoken, not what it is today. No pay, no work, no pay. I think the book even says if you don't work, you don't eat. Okay, verse 2 says it this way. As a servant earnestly desires the shade, not shadow, but the shade, as a hireling expects the wage of his work, okay, or expects his wage, so am I made to possess months of vanity, or I should say justly I am made to possess evil, and worrisome nights are appointed to me. He says, just. I need to go through these things. Job's saying some things, and he's beginning to learn something. He's already had a relationship with God to start with, hasn't he? But now he has to experience what God has spoken to him, and that's what he's beginning to do. He's refuting what the other people have said to him, his, quote, friends. And here, in this third verse, he comes up and says, justly am I made to possess months of vanity and worrisome nights, or literally, justly am I made to possess months of evil and worrisome nights are appointed to me. Guess who he said possessed the evil and the worrisome nights? I. You think that's a coincidence? He wasn't just talking about himself. He's saying I, the ego of man, is what has to possess this stuff. The only thing that will break this ego in man, this pride, and bring it to the humility of God, is this wearisome nights and the evils that we run through in life. The sufferings and situations, the pressure, the solipsis of the Scriptures. Okay. Once we experience that thing in life from the Scriptures and take it into our life and we start to walk through that, it's going to make a change in your life. Do you really have a choice in it? It's like the Fram commercial. You'll pay me now or you'll pay me later. We're all going to go through. So why not get ahead of the line and get it over with? You know, I hate, the worst thing that I always hated about something, a job, was to sit and look at it. I hated to look at something that needed to be done and it just drive you crazy looking at it, dreading what you had to do. Jump in on the thing and the next thing you know, you're done. That's why I don't want to wait. I want to get it done. Get it over with. Whatever I got to go through, let's get her going. Let's don't put it off. The word I in this chapter, you know how many times it's used? 18 times. 3 times 6, a witness of man. It's about the humanity and how humanity is all what it's all about. Most people say that it's not about them, but if you listen to their words, it'll be I, me, me, my, mine, mine. Listen to them. Listen how many times in a day you speak those things. Take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Words come from what? Thoughts. And if I'm thinking about myself, guess what I'm going to say? I, me, my, and mine. See? If I'm thinking about God, I'm going to be talking about him and them and we and us. See? I'm not going to be talking about the individual. I'm going to be talking about the corporate. I'm just putting thoughts in your mind. Let you think about it. You know, if you're never told or shown anything or given an example of anything, would you ever think it? Maybe not. See? That's why he gave us apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teachers for the perfecting of the saints and helping them to mature into the full stature of Christ. Didn't tell you how to beat them up, put them in jail, or anything else. He said, help them grow up. See, that's the purpose. So I'm just giving you something to think on. Beg pardon? It help you edify yourself and grow up into the fullness of Christ. That's what this is about. Focus upon him. Keep your eyes upon Jesus, the author and finisher of the faith. Get your eyes upon him, see, and then you don't have a problem. Okay, back to the fourth verse. When I lay down, I say, when shall I arise? And the night be driven away? And I am full, or I have had my fill, of rolling on my bed until the dawning of the day. Ooh, I was complaining there, wasn't it? Four times in that verse. I was big in that verse, wasn't it? Four times he complained about what was going on. He said, I've had my fill of it. And you know what he had his fill until? The dawning of the day. What's the dawning of the day? The day star, the morning star, the Christ rising in his life. He said, I'm going to complain until that day star rises in my heart. Just like Jacob wrestling with God. He wrestled with him all night long in that darkness and ignorance of his carnal mind. And when the day star did rise, when the sun come up in the morning, the day star, guess what? He said, ha, I see him now. There's a light on him. That's the light. He grabbed onto him and said, I'm not going to let you go till you bust me. See, that's what we have to do. And we can do nothing about it. And he says it again here. He couldn't do anything about it. He was full of it when he got frustrated with living the cares of the world about I. The day star rose. See? When it's no longer about me, my, or mine, but it's about we, us, they, and them. You know, it's about everybody, not just leaving to one person. Then God says, okay, now you got the right focus. It's on the corporate. Because God's focus is upon the world, isn't it? On the whole world. He'll take care of them. In verse 5, he goes on to say, my flesh is clothed with worms. No, it's not. That's not what it says. It says, my flesh is clothed with maggots. Now, why would he say that? But what do they devour? No. Not just flesh. No. You're missing the point. Maggots come on something that is dead. Hello. Hello. He's confessing something here. My flesh is nothing but carnality. To be carnally minded is death. To be spiritually minded is life and peace. See? He's admitting something here. He's saying, my flesh is death to me. If I listen to what my flesh tells me, I'm walking in death. See? Maggots only represent death. I know they clean up things and do things, but they feed off of death. You might even call them sent from God, huh? Cleaning up the death. If the maggots eat up all the death, guess what's left? Life. And clods of dust. He said his flesh is covered with clods of dust. Just carnality. My skin is what? Nope, not what it says. It says, my skin has boils. It's pretty bad. Remember what I said earlier this morning? When you really find out what you look like, you'll loathe yourself. Not that you condemn yourself or anything, but you'll loathe what you represent in carnality. And that's what he's coming to. He's loathing what he represents in humanity. Once he has got his eyes open to God, now he looks at himself with a different light and says, this stuff is not pretty. It's never going to be made to the king. It's never going to inherit the kingdom. It's never going to be made righteous. It's going to die and go back to the dust. But what lies within me, there's what's important. There's where it is, see? There's where it's at. And he said, my skin has boils that run, is what it should say. My skin has boils that run. He has open sores all over his body. Now, when you see people like that, it's pretty bad looking, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, flesh is death. It's disease. It's dying. It's just a process of dying. As soon as you're born, your flesh begins dying, doesn't it? It's a constant process of dying and recycling the cells of your body. Verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle. Now, if you ever seen one of those old weaver shuttles going, they're pretty quick when they go over to ship back and forth. So I don't know. He's just saying my days are going by pretty quick. And as the older we get, what do we say? Man, where'd this week go to? Where'd this last year go to? You mean it's been 5 years, Linda, since you and Keith been married? Where'd it go? You just got married last week, didn't you? It seems like it, don't it? At times it seems like you just got married and then think, 5 years ago? 25 years ago? 40 years ago? I mean, come on, it slips away before you know what happened. He's realizing that the time we have is very short. And you know what we do with most of the time God gives us? We waste it. I'm not condemning anybody. I'm as guilty as anybody else. I never even began to pay attention to God until I was nearly 40 years old. I ran from God. See, I wasted 40 years of my life. That was the first thing I said when God got a hold of me. My God, I've wasted 40 years of my life. And I never told nobody but her. Never said that to nobody else. But God sent a man from North Carolina who'd never seen me before in his life. And he came through the door and said, "Hi, how you doing? Hi, how you doing?" And he went right up and began to preach. And when he began to preach, he said, "I got to talk to you." He said, "When I met you in that door up there, God began to burn something in my heart, and I got to tell you." He said, "There were no wasted years." How could he know that? God sent it to me. He said, I'll be bold as a lion, he said, and tell you something. He said, if you'd been in church all your life, you wouldn't be where you're at today. He said, God took all those years and all that trash in your life and just turned it into rocket fuel to propel you into the kingdom of God. That's the words the man said. And you know what? It's true. It was true. You know, and I don't say that the man who spoke it even knew what or realized what he said. He used a vessel. Just like he used the dumb ass and to talk to Balaam in the Old Testament. That ass didn't know what he was saying. He just spoke. See, until you truly have a relationship with God, you're just that wild ass nature, that natural man that walks through the earth and responds to whatever it's told to do, you know, what God controls. No disrespect to the man, but, you know, we need to come to that third day, that Feast of Tabernacles, to where we come to life. If Jesus was perfected there, if he was come to life on the third day, when are we going to come? See, it's just a pattern. We've got to see these patterns and know that everything prior to that means nothing. It was just toys that he gave us to play with to keep us going, to get us to walk on into that third realm. That's all it is, to come to that third feast, that third covenant. Oh, you're going to have to fight a lot more stuff with all that stuff out of the past. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd have had a lot more to tear down, for sure. I'd had to get rid of a lot of the wrong thinking if I'd have stayed with the church realm all my life. So it was better that I went out there. David said, "I was shaped in my sins and iniquities," didn't he? He got out there and done all kinds of things. What did Solomon do? He said he tried it all, didn't he? Found out it was all vanity. He just needed a relationship with God. Okay? He said his days are swifter than the weaver's shuttle and are spent without expectation. No hope. They have no expectation. You know why? Because they don't know God. In the natural world, you know, people say, if I can just get one more handful of dollars, if I can get one more new car, if I can get one more new job, if I can get one more new house, if I can take one more vacation a year. Why? When you get that, you're going to want one more. Never satisfied. See, that's humanity. But when you come to God, you're going to learn to be, like Paul said, you're learn to be content with whatever lot God's got you in. I don't care if we never have any more people in this building. It's none of my concern. I'm just supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. I don't go out and flag people down and try to run them in here. I'm not concerned with numbers. I'm not concerned with impressing anybody. But I have the liberty to speak the truth. And that's what we all should have. That's why I don't restrict you when you have something to say. You got something to say, you have a right to speak. I didn't create you, so how can I turn you off? See what I mean? God put something in every one of us. We don't just want a pan of corn soup, do we? We want the flavor of all of it to be in here. But in God, there is hope. And if you read Romans 8, it says, the whole creation, Romans 8, verse 20, 21, says, the whole creation was subjected to vanity, not willingly, but the same creation was subjected with hope that they'd be transformed back into the glorious liberty as the sons of God. The whole creation, it didn't say part of them would be transformed, did it? All of them will be transformed back into the glorious liberty as sons of God. Beautiful, beautiful passages. And we have hope once we come to this understanding. Verse 7 says, oh, remember, but it shouldn't say, oh, the word oh is an added thing. Remember that my life is what? Literally, spirit, ruach. My life is spirit. My eyes shall not again see good. Now, some people say, well, he's meaning he's going to die and he'll never go back to where he was at, and blah, 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 blah. I see that as a good thing. I see it as a God thing. How's that? He said, I won't see good. And isn't good and evil from the same tree? Well, when he said, I'll never see good again, you know what he's going to see? God. He don't have to work at good and evil anymore. Now he sees God. Once your eyes are upon him, what do you got to worry about? Nothing. See? Forget about the good and evil stuff. It's just God. He said, the eye of him that has seen me shall see me not. Your eyes are upon me, and I exist not. I exist not. The I in him does no longer exist. How about that? What you see is not me. You won't ever see what you used to see. There's a change coming in his life. You'll never see me as I am today. If we're constantly changing, as we should be, then what you see me as today should not be the same as tomorrow. And I'm not talking being hypocritical here. I'm talking about changing more like him. It's that metamorphosis of change coming in our lives. It's a constant change. Where you are today, I should never see you there again, should I? I should see you as you metamorphosize into that new creation. Right? The process. Thank God. Yeah, thank God for that. Thank God we understand that. See? And that's the reason why so many people, when they begin their journey, begin to look back and condemn everybody. Because they think they have arrived and everybody else that's not where they're at are all wrong. See, that's a very narrow, narrow view. It's a hypocritical, self-righteous view. They were there at one time, but they don't, and someone gave them grace and mercy, and then they haven't got enough of God in them to turn around and give grace and mercy to someone else. It was a gift to us, wasn't it? Yep. For me and maybe one or two more, and the rest of y'all go to hell. That's what they're saying in their hearts. It is. Well, they're already in hell for living like that. Okay? Verse 9. As the cloud is consumed and vanishes, so is he that goes down to the what? Sheol. That's the same word as hell. But see, they said grave. That's what it should say. That's what they say. Sheol should means grave. But they use it for hell, which is wrong. It says, the ones that go down to the grave shall not again... shall come up or ascend not again. Okay? They'll ascend not. He shall return not again to his house, neither shall his place know him anymore. He's saying, you ain't going back to your house. What's your house? This body you were walking in. He said, once you go to the grave, you're not coming back to this body. And see, that goes against all the stream of being put in a grave to preserve your body. Like the embalming that goes on, come from Egypt. They're trying to save this house so you can go back to it. He said, you're not going back to this house again. Like Solomon said, when we die, the dust returns to the earth from where it came. The spirit returns to God who gave it. This dust is going back to the earth. We don't know how many bodies this thing has been before us, do we? This same dust that I'm walking in could have been 1,000 different people at some time in the past, or parts of people, couldn't it? In the dust. It went back to the dust, come back in some other form. It's none of my concern. I'm just using it temporarily. They can have it back here for long. Okay. Verse 11. And he said, it's not knowing, neither shall his place know him. So my body won't be recognized with me either. I mean, it'll be foreign to each other. And we are aliens, aren't we? Yeah. So the flesh and him have nothing to do with each other anymore. Once we're separated, we're not going back to that anymore. And I will not refrain my mouth. The eye is not gone too. I will speak in the anguish or distress of my what? Soul. Wrong word. What'd you say? Soul. Well, soul would be a good thing. It's soul or mind. I will speak in the anguish of my mind or my soul. Because the spirit doesn't have any anguish. Spirit is always at peace. See? It's only the soul or the mind, the thinking process of the natural man that gets in anguish. Jesus is peace. God is peace, right? The Christ in you is the peace. And that can never be defiled into anguish, can it? No matter what my flesh does, it can't defile the Christ. You remember he says in the New Testament, I think it's in Timothy, he says, even if you deny him, he cannot deny himself. Right? have to stand on that one. Yes, it is. He said, I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. And there's why I used the word mind there for the spirit. Yes, different words there. So he says, I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. It's in the thinking process. It's in the emotions that we're bitter, that we have anguish. It's not in the spirit. Am I a sea or a whale? Literally it says, am I a sea or a sea monster? Am I some kind of a sea monster? I'm some kind of a big monster that you set a watch or a guard over me? Am I some kind of this big horrendous monster that you got to watch? See, that's what them guys are doing. They didn't know how he's going to react. They're setting a guard on him, watching him. He said, am I some kind of a big sea monster that you got to watch over me? When I say my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall take away my complaining. Then you scare me with dreams and terrify me through visions. Or literally the word, you know what they're terrified by? Not a vision, but a revelation. The word vision here is a revelation. How about that? My counsel ease my complaining. Then you scare me with dreams and terrify me through a revelation. Well, I don't know. I don't know what they was trying to do. What? Well, it could be, but it talks about a couch. That's what's used for. But it also represents a bed to lay on or a couch that they used to lay on. Okay. A canopy bed, you know. Okay. It's part of it, but it can be used in different contexts. Okay? Verse 15, so that my soul chooses strangling. And this word literally doesn't, the word strangling is there, but there's more words that go with it. It says, so that my soul chooses the strangling as a mode of death rather than my life, than the life of this body. He's saying, because of all the things that I'm being put through, my soul says, why don't I just go ahead and die? Anybody ever heard that? Anybody ever said, I wish I'd just die and get out of this place? How many people said that? Everybody, sometime in your life, said, I wish I could just die, you know, kill me, do something, get me out of this suffering that I'm in, huh? And it's not necessarily always physical. It's usually this one up here between the ears that gets us the worst. The suffering in the mind is what's so much more painful than, see, if they shoot you in the arm, your arm will heal up and go away. But when it's in your mind, boys, I'm going to tell you, it takes a long, long time to get that out. Until God takes it out, it ain't going out. Okay, where to leave off there? 15, okay. 16, it says, I loathe it. And I, what? He said, I loathe it. Literally, it says, I despise my life. I would, or I will not live always. He's saying, I despise my life. I will not live forever. Okay? Let me alone. For my days are what? Transitory and unsatisfactory. The days of my life ain't satisfying me. Well, that sounds like I, me, my, and mine again, doesn't it? Huh? It's all about self. He said, what is man that you should what? Magnify or literally honor him. Why should you honor man? And except you give your heart to him, that you should give your heart to him. What is man that you should honor him and give your heart to him? What's that saying? So he says literally give your heart to him. What is man? If man, he said, man is nothing, is what he's saying, except the heart of God be placed in him. Isn't that what happened to Adam in Genesis 2:7? Adam formed out of the dust of the earth, and God breathed his breath, his spirit, his mind, his heart, the heart of God. Isn't it the same? Why did you put the heart of God into this man for? Why did you do that for? Why did you just let us pass away so we didn't have to go through all this suffering? God's got a better plan. And we don't see his ways all the time, do we?
Not in the midst of our struggles. We don't see anything. All we see is wah, wah.
Right. And put us, make us go through all the sufferings.
Wah.
Why do we have to go through this stuff? Why don't you just fix it for us, you know? Verse 18. And that you should visit him when? Every morning at dawn, you know. Yeah, he's there. He didn't leave. He didn't go anywhere. And test him suddenly. Not every moment, but suddenly. It's in surprise tests and pop quizzes that get you in it. When you're not planning for a test. Well, I'm on cruise control today, and all of a sudden, boom, might be a water tank blow up, might it? It could be anything. When you least expect it, see, that's what God is doing to us. See, and here's the thing. Hanging right behind you there, Mike. Character is who we are when no one's watching but God. See, it's not whether someone's there to see me, but if I went to do something and throw a temper tantrum, what would that say about my character? I got an empty pop can. It's already spewed all over the place, hasn't it? Empty pop can. Where'd Keith go? Good one, Mike. But those sudden tryings is what gets us to change. Verse 19 goes on and says, why will you not look away from me, nor let me alone long enough to spit? That's what it should say. Won't you leave me alone long enough to spit? You don't. In other words, you're aggravating me day and night. Yeah. He said, leave me alone long enough, let me spit. That's what the language really says. I think it's cute. God says some things sometimes. I mean, we got to have a sense of humor. You know what I mean? He said, I have sinned. He's confessing something here. What have I done to you? Not preserver, but observer of mankind. What have I done to you, observer of mankind? That man, that word man right there is 120, Adam. What have I done to you, observer of Adam or mankind or humanity? Who was he talking to? Eliphaz and himself. He's talking to God. He's talking to a whole bunch of people. There's a whole bunch of people in the audience. How's that? And sometimes we complain to somebody, but who are we really talking to? To ourselves or God or all through all the above, right? Well, we're venting, yes. Yes, we can be venting. Not inventing, we're outventing. Okay? Why have you set me as a what? Mark? Uh-uh. Let me draw a picture up here on the board and show you what that says. I know what it says, too. He said, why have you set me as a... target. Bullseye to shoot at. He said, why have you set me as a target? What did I do? What did I do to deserve this? You know? I'll be honest, I've asked that same question. I've asked that question so many times that he finally answered me and I shut up. I said, why have you chosen me to give me some of this information, this knowledge of you, knowing that I'm going to get in trouble with it? Why didn't you give to some big name TV evangelist or something? You know, someone that's reaching millions. He said, because I chose you. Why not you? What makes you exempt from me using you? So what are you going to do? Shut up and do what he tells you. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Beg your pardon? Oh, I've asked it before. I don't ask it anymore. I just know it's his choice and I don't have anything to say about it. He said, you've set me as a target to you so that I am a burden not to myself but to you. Now, why did he say the word not myself? The implication is there, but that's not what the word says. The word is in the language is actually you. That I am a target, I am a burden to you. Why did he say you?
He didn't say myself. He said you. Why did he say that? Someone come up with an idea here. Let me put another thought to you. I and the Father are one. Jesus said that, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And his prayer was, Father, make them one with me as I am one with you. Mm-hmm. So when he says that I am a burden to you, he wasn't talking about burdens of God sitting up in heaven somewhere. He was talking about the God inside of him. That I, is the burden to God. The God in me, the God in you. Your I is the burden to God. True? That's what he's saying. He said, I've become a burden to you. And he was talking to himself. The God in himself. No, but he said, but when he recognized that he was a burden to himself, now guess what he can deal with? The I. Till I see that the I is a burden, am I going to deal with it? I've got to see that my flesh is the burden. My fleshly thinking. He's starting to get the beam out of his own eye so he can get that splinter out of somebody else's. Okay? Beg your pardon? And why do you not pardon, or literally take away my transgression and take away my evil? Because now shall I sleep in the dust. He said, okay, take it all away. Why don't you just take it away? Because I is going to die. I is going to sleep in the dust. Sleep, in their language, is a metaphor for death. I'm going to die, okay? And you shall not seek me in the morning. He said, you shall seek me in the morning, but I shall not exist, literally, in the flesh. Hello? He said, I'm going to do something about my condition. You have brought a light to me. The day star has come up in my life, and now I see the errors of my way. And I tell you now, by the Spirit is speaking in him, that now the eye is going to sleep in the dust, and when you seek me in the morning, you won't find me in the flesh.
Isn't that what Paul said about covetousness?
He said, until I knew about covetousness, he said, I coveted until I knew that covetousness was wrong, and it was brought to me by the law. And when I knew that, then I no longer wanted to covenant anymore. See? Something has to happen in your life to bring you to a point to realize an error of your way. That's not condemnation and guilt. God doesn't condemn us. If someone condemns you for something, it's not God. They can say it's in God's name, but it's not God. God's nature and character is not to condemn. It's to reconcile. He will show you the error of your way. He will reveal the errors of our ways, but he will not condemn us in that process. Show me one time that he condemned. Jesus never condemned anyone, did he? He even told the woman that by law was supposed to die, and the men that there was to kill her ran away. He knew how to deal with them. He just sat down and started writing their names in the dust. And in the Old Testament, Jeremiah says, anyone's name that's written in dust shall be eliminated, you know, taken away, done away with. He just started writing their names in dust. Them old boys knew the letter of the law. He started doing that. They're all gone. I think he said to the woman, woman, where's your accusers? She said, I don't have any. He said, I'm not condemning either. Go on, don't do that no more. Oh, he knows how to take care of everything. He's got it under control. And that's what we got to do, get ourselves under control. He never panicked when someone wanted to kill him. They tried to throw him off a cliff. They tried to stone him, all kinds of things. Did he ever panic? He just dealt with it. See, he knew something. And this is what we have to do. In that personal relationship with God, we have to come to peace and not worry about anything anyone else is saying or doing around you. You got to take care of your own life. Work out your own salvation or deliverance with honor and respect to God. Work it out yourself. I'm just here to help you, not trying to boss anybody.